Zaytuna Knowledge Resource presents The Fiqh of Ramadan, according to the great scholars of the Maliki Madhab, taught by Brother Muhammad Rami Ansour.
Bismillah wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulillah. So we're going to start today the Fiqh of Ramadan, and everybody should have the translation in front of them. I think they have it outside if you don't have it. And this is taken from the Risale of Ibn Abi Zayd al-Qayrawani. And just to give a little bit about the author of this text, Ibn Abi Zayd, his name is Abdullah ibn Abi Zayd al-Qayrawani. He's from Qayrawan in present what is now currently Tunis. And they call him the little Malik, because Malik radiallahu anhu, when he was in Medina, after studying with the Shiuch, and Malik took from 900 Shiuch. He took from 600 of the Tabi'is and 300 from the Tabi'is. So after Malik took from 900 of the highest scholars in Medina in the first generations, and then after studying with those shiuch, and after being given permission to give fatwa from 70 of the highest of those scholars, he became the main source of fatwa in Medina, to the point they said that لا يفتى ومالكم في المدينة. Nobody gives fatwa as long as Malik is in the Medina. So he was the top, even with people that had seen the Sahaba. He didn't see the Sahaba, but he saw people that saw the Sahaba, and so he was giving fatwa at that time. And when he was given permission to give fatwa, he was 17 years old. So with that in mind, and you can read more about Malik, but knowing that his position, and the Prophet ﷺ said that there will come a time when people will hit the livers of their camels, like beating the camels going east and west, searching for knowledge, and they won't find anybody more knowledgeable than the scholar of Medina. So if you hear anybody, especially in this day and age, you hear a lot of people criticize Malik for different aspects of his madhab. If you hear anybody criticize Malik, know that he's a bid'i. He's a person of bid'i. And this is the kalam, this is what Ahmed ibn Hanbal said. He said, if you see anybody that does not like Malik, know that that person is a bid'i. And you're going to have people at varying levels. Some people say really harsh things against him, so you know that their bid'ah is really into their heart. And bid'ah is innovation in the deen. So it's either innovation in their practice or in their belief. They're still a Muslim, but they've innovated something. They've brought something new, something foreign, unknown into the deen. So Ahmed ibn Hanbal said, if you see anyone that does not like Malik, know that he's a bid'i. And you find this from people that don't adhere to certain madhabs, people that say, I don't follow a madhab, and they criticize madhab. But you also find this from people that adhere to madhabs. You find people that follow madhabs, whether they're Maliki or Shafi'i or Hanafi or whatever, and still they'll criticize Malik. So if you hear anybody criticizing Malik, we're not saying that Malik is a prophet, but we are saying that our particular way to get to the Prophet ﷺ is through the scholars. And one of the greatest scholars out of all the scholars is one of the four, and one of those four happens to be Malik. So when we say we're following Malik, we're actually following the Prophet ﷺ through Malik. We're not following Malik himself. We're following the Prophet ﷺ, but through him. It's the difference between the means and the ends. So Malik is not an end. We're not. When we say this is the Maliki madhab or you're a Maliki, that's not it. You're a Maliki, you're a Muslim. But you're following Islam through the understanding of Malik. So when you hear people that criticize Malik, stay away from them and don't even listen to them. And that may be as simple as somebody says, well, Malik made a mistake. If you hear anybody that says Malik made a mistake, or Malik doesn't understand, or Malik doesn't understand the times that we're living in, don't even pay attention to that. And they'll say that like, oh, this is the Maliki hukum, but, you know, he doesn't understand our times. And you'll see there's things that we're going to get to a point in here where you'll see where these scholars not only knew the Qur'an and knew the Sunnah and knew the Arabic language and knew Aqidah and knew the science of purification of the heart, but they were also what would be termed today as sociologists, as psychologists, as biologists, because all these things have an effect on the Sharia. And so when they were giving hukums, when they were giving fatwas, all that came into play when they answer the question, and there will be a specific example to that when we get to the section of fasting and Shawwal. I'll prove to you actually a couple sections in here where I'll show where Malik's understanding of human nature, and so that goes into sociology and psychology, with his knowledge of the Quran and Sunnah, gave him a reason to make certain judgments, and you'll see the proof of that in how it came over time. So that's Malik. Malik's main student was Ibn al-Qasim. The student of Ibn al-Qasim, the main student of Ibn al-Qasim was Sahnun. And Ibn Abi Zayd took from one of the students of son of the students of Sahnun. And also Ibn Abi Zayd wrote this text of the Risala when he was 17. So Ibn Abi Zayd was called the little Malik.
One, because he was teaching the Maliki Madhab, but also because he's similar to Malik in that this text was written when he was 17 years old, and Malik gave fatwa in Medina when he was 17 years old. And in this text, the Risal of Ibn Abi Zayd, and you can see this is just the translation of the section, but if you see the original text in Arabic, it's quite a lengthy text, relatively. And he initially wrote it for children, because he said that people give their children the Qur'an through memorization. They also wanted to give them an understanding of the deen, the principles of Islam, both the belief systems, the practices, the Islam, and then also the ihsan, like the purification of the heart. So they wanted to have the children understand those principles through memorization, through memorizing a text, and then later on, once they get to an age where they can comprehend better, they would understand what they have memorized. And so he wrote this text originally for children. So we're studying a children's text. What was traditionally in the Muslim lands a text for children. But as time went on, people's gaining of knowledge became later and later in their life. So for example, by the time, in traditional learning, by the time a person was 20 years old, he was at the highest level. So if you read the travels of Ibn Battuta, Ibn Battuta is a famous Moroccan scholar, and he's mostly known for his traveling around the world. He spent 30 years traveling around the world. But before he left Panja, Tangiers, he had completed the scholarly text of Arabic, of fiqh, of Quran, and of hadith. And you'll see if you read that text, it's interesting, the travels of Ibn Battuta, along with the fact that it's just interesting what he saw and what he recorded, but also the fact that because he was a faqih in the Maliki Madhab, in the different places he was, he would be able to give fatwa. In a number of places where he stayed around the world, he was made the qadi or made the mufti. And he was able to do that after completing his studies, and he was only 20 years old. But now as time went on and people's studying became later in their lives, or they weren't giving a chance to, or they became Muslim later in their lives, so we're studying what the children are studying. So in a way, we're like children in that we're studying what should have been taught to us when we were children. So for those people that do have children, what you're learning today, you should be passing on to their children either orally or through texts before they become at the age of taklif, when it becomes an obligation upon them to fast and to pray and so forth. So we'll start the text. It's on, he says, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. He begins by saying, باب في الصيام وما يتعلق به وهو لغة الإمساك والترك فمن أمسك عن شيء ما وتركه قيل له صائم قال الله تعالى حكاية عن مريم إني نذرت للرحمن الصوم. He said that in the beginning, this is also from the commentary, this is not from the text, but he said this deals with fasting, which linguistically in the Arabic language, صوم or صيام means to restrain and abandon. So if you restrain or you abandon from anything, you're referred to as a صائم, as one who's stopping something. And so that's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he's relating the story of Maryam alayhi salam, when she said, إِنِّي نَذَرْتُ لِلرَّحْمَنِ صَوْمًا, I have vowed a fast to the All-Merciful. The fast that she had vowed there was not a fast from food, it was a fast from speech. So she was fast, she promised to not speak to the people. And this was a fast that the Bani Israel used to do, but in the where they would fast from speaking, they wouldn't speak. But in the Sharia of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, there we don't do that. So it's makruh, it's disliked for a person. Sometimes people come across that in the Quran, they read that Maryam alayhi salam did a fast from speech, and so they say, I'm going to do that for a day or for 2 days. But the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that there should be no silence from day or to night. So you can. He's going to talk about in the fasting about unnecessary speech, but you shouldn't make it an intention where that you're not going to. You say, I'm not going to speak anything today. And in the Sharia, the word siyam or som means to restrain the appetites of the stomach and the genitals from dawn to sunset with an intention before or at dawn, except in the days of menstruation, laqiyah, and idda, and the Eids. Fasting is divided into obligatory and non-obligatory. So there's both fard fasting and non-obligatory fasting. Now you notice here at the beginning where he starts out describing what sawm means in the Arabic language and what it specifically means in the Sharia sense. And this is really important because some people, if they don't know the Sharia, but they happen to know Arabic, if they read something in the Quran or in the Hadith, they'll try to give commentary on that particular idea based on their understanding of the Arabic language. But they have to know that sometimes something can mean one thing in Arabic, but what it means in the Sharia is something totally different. So you see here that in Arabic language, sawm means to restrain. It could be restrained from anything, from speaking, from spending, from eating. But specifically in the Sharia, sawm means to refrain from food and drink. وَصَوْمُ شَهْرِ رَمَضَانِ فَرِيضَةٌ. So the types of fasting, there's obligatory and there's non-obligatory. The obligatory fasting is the fasting during Ramadan, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. يُصَامُ لِرُؤْيَةِ الْهِلَالِ وَيُفْطَرُ لِرُؤْيَتِهِ. So you when the fast begins, you start fasting when the new moon is sighted, and you stop fasting when the new moon is sighted. كان 30 يوما أو 29 يوما فإن غم الهلال فيعد 30 يوما من غرة الشهر الذي قبله ثم يصام وكذلك في الفطر. So you start fasting when the new moon is sighted, and you stop fasting when the new moon is sighted, whether this is after 30 or 29 days. If the new moon cannot be seen because of clouds, and you count 30 days from the beginning of the preceding month and then begin fasting, if the new moon cannot be seen because of clouds, you count 30 days from the beginning of the preceding month and then begin fasting. The same applies to ending the fast. So the way we establish Ramadan is a lunar month. So it starts when we can actually see the moon. So we go out after, on the 29th day of Sha'ban, we go out to a place where you have a clear view of the western sky. If you notice, you'll notice that the moon rises in the east just like the sun, and it sets in the west. So it goes over, and it's you'll look in the western western portion of the sky right after or right before Maghrib to look for the hilal, and it'll be just a thin crescent. You can barely see it. But once you see it, then it becomes an obligation to begin the fasting of the month. The next day will be the first day of Ramadan. If you see it yourself, you have to start fasting, whether the community sights it or not. And when we talk about sighting, we talk about a physical sighting with the eye, with not using telescopes or binoculars or high-powered cameras. We're talking about with the eye, and also not using calculations. If the calendar says the new moon is today, or the astronomers say the new moon is today, we disregard what they're saying, because the Sharia is based on we base the Sharia rulings based on the way it was presented in the Sunnah. So the Sunnah is that you go out and look for it. If you see it yourself, then you begin fasting. If you don't see it yourself, or the community doesn't see it, they need two witnesses to establish the fast for the people. So two just witnesses. And the just witness has to be an upright male member of the community. And it doesn't, when they say upright, they don't mean just, he just leaves the haram and he does the bare minimum. It means his character, he's an upstanding member of the community. So it's not just any Muslim. So it has to be a male with upstanding character, and you have to have two of those. See the moon. So if they see the moon and then they relate their sighting to the community, it then becomes an obligation on that entire community. As for what is happening today, two things: either basing it on calculation or basing it on our far land. Those both of those matters were discussed early on in the amongst the Muslim scholars, because some people say now, they say, well, there's things now that they weren't around back then. They had astronomy has been around for a long time, and maybe even they had better understanding of astronomy than present day. Now they have telescopes and tools where they can see things, but some of the early peoples had a better understanding of astronomy than now. So the idea of establishing the new month through hisab or through calculation was an early thing. If you do have somebody that can establish it, say, even though you can't see it, that today is the new moon, we don't fast based on his sighting. And that's according to the Malikis. We don't fast based according to the sighting. The Shafi'is say if a person is an astronomer or he understands the calculation himself, and he established that by calculation this is the new month, he himself can fast, but it does not become an obligation upon his community to fast based on him. So if it's this, after in about 2 weeks when we go out to look, if it's cloudy and we can't see anything, or it's not cloudy but we don't have two just witnesses, or if we don't have two just witnesses, we need a large group of people, 20, 30, 40, 50 people, a group large enough that it's impossible for them to have gotten together and lied. Because that's one of the things, one of the reasons why the Sharia, we don't just have anybody come and say that the month has been established. Because if we just base it on just anybody, then some stupid Muslim that just wants to play around with the fasting of the Muslims can come up and say, oh, I saw it. And so then the entire community bases their fast on him, and then he kind of gets a sense of power or something that he had an effect on the community. So you need two just witnesses or a group large enough that it's impossible for them to have gotten together and said, okay, let's make up a sighting. Pretend that we saw a sight of the moon. And this has actually been happened in Mauritania, where people have gotten together and said they'll do it. And I heard it was also somebody told me in India or Pakistan they did it. So there are times when people do get together and say, let's say we sighted the moon. For various reasons they do that. So when we're looking for the new month, we base it just on sighting. We don't base it on calculation, and we also don't base it on a far-off land. If people want to say we should be like the Christians and have a Vatican just like the Christians, and let's make our Vatican Mecca, that's essentially what they're saying. We should all fast with Mecca. That's they want to fast with Mecca, or they want to fast with their homeland, but it's too far away. Because the early scholars said, the Maliki scholar, Imam Malik said that if the moon was sighted in a distant land, the distance what is between Andalus and Khorasan, which is current day Spain and Afghanistan, about 3,000 English miles, then you can use that judgment. So if say somebody's here in California and he hears there's two witnesses in Texas saw the moon. He can fast based on that. But if he's in California and somebody in Morocco saw it, then you don't fast based on their sighting, according to Imam Malik. According to the Shafi'i Madhab, you can only go out 50 English miles, the distance of shortening your travel. So if somebody in San Francisco saw it, the people in LA can't fast based on their sightings, or even the people 50 miles away can't be based. So that's at least according to the Malik and the Shafi'i. Now, people can say, you know, well, now the times have changed. If people want to do that, if they want to fast based on, like, new things, that's between them and their Lord. What we're talking about here is what was preserved by Imam Malik in the time, 100 years, Hijrah, after the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So once we establish the month of Ramadan, then we start fasting. We also end the month of Ramadan by sighting the moon, also by two just witnesses or by a large group, which is called Jama'a Mustafila. So on the 29th day of Ramadan, we also go out to look. If we sight it, then Eid is the next day. If we don't sight it, then we fast 30 days. Now, if we don't sight the moon, like say in 2 weeks we don't sight the moon, we make Sha'ban this month, we fast 30 days. Now, the only way we can know that what day is Sha'ban is by having gone out and looked for the month of Sha'ban. So really, starting at Rajab, the Muslims should be looking for every month just to know the months when it starts and when it ends. But Rajab and Sha'ban are really important to know, because knowing them is going to have an effect on knowing Ramadan. So if you didn't start calculating on Rajab, and say the 29th day of Rajab is cloudy, and then the 29th day of Sha'ban is cloudy, so we didn't have a sighting, so we're going to have to base it on 30 days. Sha'ban 30 days, and we also make Rajab 30 days. But the only way to have known that is to at least have sighted it in Rajab. Now, Rajab, you only need one just witness to sight it. But there should be, the Muslim community should have a person that's going out there to sight it. وَيُبَيُّ تُصْلِيَامْ فِي أَوَّلِهِ وَلَيْسَ عَلَيْهِ الْبَيَاتُ فِي بَقِيَّتِهِ. The intention. Because the intention is a condition of the fast, you should make an intention to fast the whole month at the beginning of the month, and it is not necessary to make a new intention every night for the rest of the month. So once we know that Ramadan has been established, you make the intention, and the intention is in the heart. You don't have to actually speak it. You just realize in your heart that you're going to fast this entire month. Once you do that, once you make the intention to fast the entire month, then every subsequent night, even if you don't make it present in your heart that you're going to fast the next day, it's considered a valid fast, because your first intention counts for the rest of Ramadan. Now, it is recommended to renew the intention every single night, but it's not a condition to make the subsequent fasts correct. And he mentions there in the commentary, he speaks about the other situation. One intention being good for the entire month is as long as the fast has not been interrupted by an excuse. So if a person gets sick during Ramadan and can no longer fast, say he gets sick for a week or for a couple days and he breaks his fast, now when he gets healthy and able to start fasting again, he has to renew his intention. He can't say, well, I had the intention the first night and then he's just going to pick up. He has to have the intention. If his fast was interrupted due to sickness, due to travel, because during travel you don't have, it's not obligation to fast. Even if you fasted during travel, which is recommended to do and it fulfills the obligation, even if you fasted, you said, you know, it's not that hard, it's not a hardship on me, I'm going to do it anyway. When you're traveling, you have to renew the intention every night. Or if a person is sick and he has the excuse to not fast, but he chooses to fast, he also has to be making the intention every night. So really the principle is, if it's an obligation to fast consecutively, one intention counts for the first day, and then you can use that intention for the rest of that time. If it becomes that the fast is not an obligation to do consecutively, or it's broken up by either menstruation for a woman, or lakia, or childbirth, or sickness for both males and females, or for traveling, then once he starts fasting again, he has to renew his intention, and then it's good for the remainder of Ramadan. So anytime there's a break in the fasting, you have to renew your intention. Oh, and then as far as questions, if there's anything that's not clear and it's like pertinent, like to exactly what we're talking about, just write it down on a piece of paper and pass it up. If it's something kind of related to it, also pass it up and we'll deal with that at the end of the class. But if there is something that you, like I mentioned, and sometimes I go a little bit quickly, if it's something's not clear, go ahead and if it's not clear and you just need me to repeat it, just say, could you repeat that? If it's a question, write it down and then pass it up. So far on this page, is everything clear? So then the duration of the fast. وَيُتِمُّ الصِّيَامَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ. And then the fasting starts from the dawn. And the dawn is right when once you see that first string of light come up from the eastern horizon. Once the day begins, that's when you start fasting. Now, what we've seen, the papers that you get, that you can print off the internet or are given at Masajid, sometimes it says Fajr comes in at a certain time. We go out to check and we don't see the Fajr comes out. So for praying Fajr, it's problematic. Because if you pray right when that timetable says, you might be praying in the end of the night and Fajr hasn't begun. And if you don't believe me, go out to like a field, especially if you get into the valley where there's no mountains in between you, look at what the paper says and see if you can see the Fajr. And I'm not saying that all the papers are wrong, but sometimes we have noticed that it is especially for Dhuhr time, it's way before the time that we can actually measure it when we're measuring it on the shadows. But in Ramadan, it's even if you like stopped eating right where it says, it's not really problematic. So really don't really base your breaking of the fast or your starting the fast based on the papers. Go outside and look. You can kind of get a general idea for when the day ends or when it begins using that timetable, but always go back to the signs, because that's the original way in the Quran. That's how it says we're supposed to fast, watching the Fajr and then also for telling the prayers using the sun and the shadows. So once the night comes, and that's also from looking, if you're at the coast or if you're on a flat area on a plain, and you can actually see the sun go down below the horizon, then as soon as you see the top of the disk of the sun drop below the horizon, you can break your fast. If you can't see that, like here in the Bay Area, because there's mountains in between us, actually in the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun, for Maghrib time, for the prayer and for breaking the fast, look to the east. Once you see the blue, when the sun's still up, it's going to make the blue in the sky like a light blue. As soon as it goes down, it's going to turn a little bit grayish, and it's going to be like a dull gray. And once you see that, and give it and let that dull gray kind of like get high up in the sky, because we have mountains on both sides. But once you see that, then you can break your fast, and it's sunnah to break the fast as soon as it comes in. So don't delay it, and especially don't delay it if you think, well, I'm going to increase my reward by, you know, no, the sunnah is that you break the fast as soon as the time comes in. وَمِنَ السُنَّةِ تَعْجِيلُ الْفِطْرِ. So you break your fast as soon as it comes in. He doesn't mention it in the text here, or even in the commentary, but the best thing to break the fast on is rotab, which is not really the dates, Like here in California, because there's we have date palms very close. If you go to some of the Middle Eastern stores, the Afghani or the Arab stores, you'll find the fresh dates, which it's kind of like what a grape is to before raisins are raisin, it's a grape. Before dates, it's beleh, which is the fresh dates. And when it gets to when the date is kind of half fresh and then half date, that's called rutab. And that's the best thing to break the fast on. If you can't find rutab, then you go to tamar, just the regular dates. If you can't find dates, then anything sweet. And if you can't find that, then just water. And you shouldn't have your meal, like right when you break it, just eat anything, even if it's a few dates. And the sunnah is, if you're going to do dates or sips of water or sweets, whatever it may be, to do an odd number, 3, 5, or 7. If you are only going to do one, it's better, they said, to do 2 dates rather than one. So it shows the dates or whatever it is, sips of water, 2, 3, 5, or 7. So just something just to break their fast for the sunnah. And if you're really thirsty, go ahead and drink so that you're not thinking about your thirst during the prayer. But once you break your fast, go do your prayer and then have your meal after the prayer. Because if you have, if you try to have the meal before the prayer, it's going to do 2 things. One, it's going to delay you from performing the prayer, which you're going to let the time of Maghrib go out, which Maghrib time is very short, at least according to the dominant opinion of the Maliki and one of the stronger of the two opinions of the Shafi'i. It's just the time, Maghrib time is just enough time to do wudu or do a ghusl if you need to do a ghusl, and then find a place to pray and perform the prayer. So it's pretty short. So if you go and have your meal, you're going to let that time of Maghrib pass. So just break your fast, And then pray Maghrib, and then you can have your meal after that. And then also, if you try to have your meal before Maghrib, then when you pray, your stomach's going to be really heavy, and you're not going to be able to concentrate fully on the prayer. And then it's also sunnah wa ta'khir as-suhuri, to delay the pre-dawn meal, the suhoor. And then there is also there's a number of du'as that you can make when you break the fast. They don't have them here written in Arabic, but if you have a little du'a book, there's a lot of du'as that have for when you're breaking the fast. Then the delaying of the suhoor, and so the suhoor, the time for the suhoor starts after midnight. Now that's not midnight based on what's commonly known as midnight. It's based on midnight based on the actual night. So say Maghrib is at 7 o'clock, just for example's sake, we're going to say Maghrib, night begins at 7, and then dawn is at 7 o'clock. So we have a 12-hour night. So half of that is 6, add 6 to 7, you get 1 o'clock. So at 1 o'clock would be midnight, would be after half of the night. After 1 o'clock, that's when the time for suhoor starts. But it's recommended to delay it until like the last third of the night. So if at that time, if we said Maghrib was at 7 and Fajr was at 7, 1/3 of the night is 4 hours. 4 hours before 7 would be 3 o'clock. So in that example, it would be 3 o'clock. Now we're praying Fajr, say about 5:50, 5:55. Maghrib is about 7:25. So just do the calculation. Half of the night, that's when suhoor time starts. So if before that, if you're eating suhoor before that, it's not considered suhoor. You eat it after suhoor, it's good. I mean, after that time, that's when it's actually considered suhoor. And then at the last third of the night, that's the best time to do it. And you can do it up until the dawn, up until the time of dawn comes in. Now, since we're here in the bay, we can't really see the actual time dawn comes in. By the time we actually see the light come up over the mountains, dawn has already been in for a few minutes. So once you establish that time, kind of give yourself some time before that and stop eating. So you can go up until the actual dawn, but it's also recommended that you give the time. The Prophet ﷺ used to stop eating before the dawn comes in, the time it would take for him to recite 50 ayahs. And then even if a person says for suhoor, says, you know what, I can get through the day without, I don't need that breakfast, just get up at the end of the night before the sunnah. Not, you know, but that's the main reason. It definitely, there's a wisdom in it. Everything in the sunnah, there's a wisdom to it. So for example, like, why do we break the fast on something sweet? Because you'll notice that it kind of gives you your blood sugar levels is down from not eating all day, and so you just get some. So even the dates, when you eat it, chew it really, really good. And then for the end of the night, it gives you some strength throughout the day, so that because in the first part of Ramadan you'll be able to do, you may be able to get through the days without getting up at the end of the night, but by the middle, the end of the month, you're going to be really tired. And some people, as soon as they get home from work, they'll go to sleep until it's time to pray Maghrib. Like say they get home at 3 o'clock, they'll just go to sleep and wake up at Maghrib time, which is a sign that their body is really weak, and it's probably because they're not having good suhoor. And because if you're sleeping after Asr, first of all, Asr, it's makruh to sleep after. The times that it's makruh to sleep after is after, right after Fajr. From the time you pray the morning prayer until the sun comes up, it's disliked to sleep. It's also disliked to sleep after Asr until Maghrib, and then from Maghrib until Isha. And one of the reasons behind being disliked to sleep between Maghrib and Isha is because you might sleep and then wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning to pray Isha. So if you want to sleep right after Isha, or after Dhuhr. It's sunnah to take a nap before after Dhuhr. So while you're fasting, it's get up and do the dawn, and then also if you need to take a nap, take it in the midday. Because if you take it after Asr, or if you take it, some people as soon as they eat, they'll go to sleep after Maghrib. And then the problem with that is that you're losing time for ibadah, because Ramadan is a time that's really precious for worship. So the more time you sleep, the less time you have to perform ibadah. And if a person says, "Well, I'm really tired," then follow the sunnah. Have a good breakfast before dawn. Take a nap before or after dhuhr. Don't go to sleep right after fajr. Like stay up after fajr, do what you need to do, and then when you need, even if it's only a 15-minute nap during the daytime, you'll feel really refreshed. Take the nap, and then you'll see that even with the fasting, you'll have time to be able to get through the day, to recite as much Quran as you can, to be praying as much as you can, to studying, to do whatever ibadah you are doing in Ramadan, you'll be given the strength. So all of the following the sunnah is going to give you the strength to do the ibadah. If a person just says, "Well, I can get through it," he's going to notice that his body is going to take a toll on his body. Any questions so far, or clarifications needed? If you are not sure about the time of Fajr has come in or not, you should not eat. So, like the example I was giving, if you're looking for the dawn and you can't see it because it's cloudy or because of the mountains are in the east, and you say, "You know what, I have doubt. I don't know whether dawn has come in or not," and you go ahead and eat, you have to make up that fast. Once Ramadan is over, you continue fasting. You don't eat. You continue. It's actually called imsak. You have to do imsak. You continue on this invalid fast. So you continue on, and then at the end of Ramadan, after the Eid, you make up that fast. Now, if for some reason, say you have doubt about the dawn, and you go ahead and eat, and then later you say, "Well, actually, no. I realize that the dawn had not come in." You did something prohibited, but your fast is still valid. So don't, like, if a person has doubt, say, "Well, I'm already broke my fast, let me eat something." Continue on your fast like you should. And if it becomes apparent to you that the dawn has not actually come in, then your fast is valid, but you did something prohibited. And the same is for breaking the fast. If you have doubt about whether or not Maghrib has come in, don't eat. If you do, you have to make up that fast. Now, if you eat after having doubt about the entering of Maghrib, and then it becomes apparent that Maghrib was actually in, then you had done something prohibited, but your fast is valid. So the main thing to remember is don't break your fast until you're sure or you're almost sure that Maghrib is in, and stop eating and don't eat when you have doubt whether or not Fajr is in. ولا يصام يوم الشك ليحتاط به من رمضان. You do not fast on the day of doubt, fasting on the grounds that it might be part of Ramadan. So, like we were talking about earlier about establishing Ramadan, we establish Ramadan by looking at the month of Sha'ban, which is the month that we're in. After 29 days of Sha'ban, we go out to look. If it's cloudy, then the 30th day of Sha'ban is called the day of doubt. And the reason it's called the day of doubt is because we don't know whether it's Ramadan, the first of Ramadan, or the 30th of Sha'ban. Because we did go out to look for it and it was cloudy. So that's considered the day of doubt. Now, a person may say, "Well, I'm going to fast that day just in case it's Ramadan." That's considered makruh. Because the Prophet ﷺ told people not to fast on the day of doubt. And Aisha radiallahu anha said, "Man sama yawm ash-shak faqad asa Abul Qasim." that whoever fasts on the day of doubt has rebelled against Abu al-Qasim, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Now, again, going back to the Arabic language that we were talking about in the beginning of the text, when you hear the word in Arabic "asa" or in the English "rebelled," you think that it's a sin. Like if somebody in Arabic "asa," like he has sinned, you think that would mean that fasting on that day is haram. And you do find people that read this hadith and not knowing the commentary and not knowing the Arabic language, they think it's haram to fast on that day. So they'll tell people it's haram to fast on that day. What they should understand is that that asa in that context means that it's makruh, it's disliked. And sometimes they would use the word like he has disobeyed him. He has disobeyed. Abu al-Qasim is one of the names of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, because one of his children was named, his son was named Qasim, his firstborn son. So Aisha said, whoever fasts the day of doubt, which is the 30th day of Sha'ban or the first day of Ramadan, فَقَدْ عَصَى أَبَ الْقَاسِمِ, has disobeyed the Prophet ﷺ. But this asa, she just used the word asa, disobeyed, to say that it's a very disliked matter. But it's by no means haram. So again, that goes back to having to know the Arabic language to give definition to hadiths or to Quran or to sayings of the Sahaba. وَمَنْ صَامَهُ كَذَلِكَ لَمْ يُجْزِهِ وَإِنْ وَافَقَ مِنْ رَمَضَانِ. Now, if a person went ahead and fasted the day of doubt, say he said, you know what, we're not sure if this is Ramadan, the first of Ramadan or the 30th of Sha'ban, but I'm going to fast just in case it's the first of Ramadan. So say he goes ahead and fasts it. He did what was disliked, he did the makruh and he fasted. Now, two people come to their village or come to their town and say, you know what, 20 miles away we saw the moon. So that sighting based on those two just witnesses, or that if it was a large group, establishes Ramadan for that day. So if the news comes in, like say this is now, we're in the afternoon, it's almost 6 o'clock, it's still daylight. Pretend this was the 30th day of Sha'ban. We all didn't fast Sha'ban, we're following the sunnah, it was the day of doubt, we're not fasting. Somebody comes in the door right now and says, you know what, we sighted the moon. And they're two just witnesses. So at that point, everybody that should be fasting, we have to stop eating. Because now we know that it's Ramadan, it's haram to eat in Ramadan unless you have a valid reason. Now, because we went into this day not fasting, we have to make it up once it's over. But say there was one person that says, well, you know what? I went ahead and fasted because it was the day of doubt, just in case it was Ramadan. But even for him, it's not considered a day of Ramadan. Because his niyyah, his intention was a little, it was doubtful. He was doubtful about his intention. He wasn't sure whether it was Ramadan or not. He said, you know what, there's a chance it's Ramadan, there's a chance it's not Ramadan, I'm going to go ahead and fast. In any of your acts of worship, you have to have yaqeen, 100% surety, or ghalabat al-dhan, or almost sure that you before you perform this. So if, for example, you say, I don't know if dhuhr time is in, I have doubt. If you pray dhuhr, your dhuhr is not valid. Even if it becomes apparent that dhuhr had actually come in. So just like this in Ramadan, you fasted the first day of Ramadan, but there was a chance it was the 30th of Sha'ban. But because you had that doubt, it's not a valid. Because you have, when you go into ibadah, you have to have 100% certainty, or you're almost certain. So the same thing goes for the prayer. The same thing pays for zakat. Like say an entire year, you don't know has an entire year passed on my wealth or not, and you go ahead and you pay zakat, and then it goes to its recipients. That's not valid because you have doubt about whether the year has passed on your wealth.
وَلِمَنْ شَاءَ صَوْمَهُ تَطَوُّعٌ أَنْ يَفْعَلَ.
If you want to fast that day as a voluntary fast, however, you can do so. So to fast the day, the 30th of Sha'ban, when we don't know whether it's the 30th of Sha'ban or the first of Ramadan, it's makruh, dislike to do that if you're doing it with the intention of just in case it's Ramadan. But if you're doing it just to say, like say, you, in Sha'ban, he's going to mention later on that it's highly recommended to be fasting in this month. So say a person was saying, you know what, I want to fast because it's Sha'ban. He can do that. Or a person was fasting every Monday and Thursday, and that 30th day of Sha'ban happened to be on a Monday or Thursday, he can do that. Or he was fasting every other day, or any other reason. If it was a voluntary fast, he can do that.
وَمَنْ أَصْبَحَ فَلَمْ يَأْكُلْ وَلَمْ يَشْرُبْ ثُمَّ تَبَيَّنَ لَهُ أَنَّ ذَلِكَ الْيَوْمِ الرَّمَضَانِ لَمْ يُجْزِهِ وَلْيُمْسِكْ عَنَّ الْأَكْلِ فِي بَقِيَّتِهِ وَيَقْضِيهِ.
If you get up in the morning and discover before you have eaten or drunk anything that Ramadan has begun, you must fast the rest of the day, but you cannot fast it as one of the days of Ramadan. You must fast the rest of the day, but you cannot count it as one of the days of Ramadan, and you have to make up that day. So say on the 29th day of Sha'ban, you go out to look and you don't see the moon. or you don't go out to look, you were trying to call up people and you didn't find out whether it's Ramadan or not. So you know that this next morning is Yom HaShek, the day of doubt. So you're not going to fast it. You get up in the morning, after the Fajr, you get up and you didn't eat or didn't drink anything, and now it's 8 o'clock in the morning. You still haven't drank or eaten anything just because you didn't do so. You're not fasting. And somebody calls you up and say the moon was sighted, 2 just witnesses saw it. So this is the first day of Ramadan. From that point, once you realize that it's Ramadan, you do not eat or drink anything the rest of the day. You do what's called imsak. You don't drink, eat or drink anything. You act as if you're fasting, but it doesn't count as one of your days of Ramadan because you did not have the intention before Fajr. So even though the dawn came up, the new day came upon you, and you had not eaten or drank anything, but because you did not have the intention before the dawn came in, that's not considered a valid fast. So are people clear on that? So on the day of doubt, he says that if you get up in the morning, so this is when we're talking about if you discover it's Ramadan's in the morning. So for whatever reason, either you went out to look for the moon of Ramadan and you didn't see it, or you didn't go out to see it but you were trying to call up people, or you didn't even care. You didn't try to look for it. You didn't try to ask about it, which a person shouldn't do. It's wajib upon them to look either by looking for it or look for somebody that has looked for it. But in whatever the case, you didn't have yaqeen. You did not establish that it's Ramadan. So you wake up in the morning to pray Fajr, and you don't eat or drink anything, not because you're fasting, but just because it happens that you didn't eat or drink anything. A couple hours later, you still haven't eaten or drank anything. Somebody calls you up or somebody comes over and says, today's Ramadan, it's been cited in such and such place. Now you realize that this is no longer the day of doubt. The day of doubt, remember we were saying it's either 30th day of Sha'ban or 1st of Ramadan. So that's the day of doubt. But now you know this is the 1st of Ramadan and Sha'ban was only 29 days. So now that you know that, you have to realize you're in Ramadan. And during the daylight hours of Ramadan, you cannot eat or drink anything. So at that point, you cannot eat or drink for the rest of the day. But because you did not have the intention to fast that day before the dawn, this is not considered a valid fast. Because the reason he's mentioning this, because somebody will say, well, between the dawn and between Maghrib, I didn't eat or drink anything. So why shouldn't this be considered my fast? And they answer by saying, yes, but fasting is that you don't eat or drink anything along with having an intention before dawn. Is that clear? And so if that person went into the first day of Ramadan not knowing that it was the first day of Ramadan, and then he realizes that, he has to make up that day. وَإِذَا قَدِمَ الْمُسَافِرُ مُفْطِرًا أَوْ طَهَرَتِ الْحَيْضُ نَهَارًا فَلَهُمَ الْأَكْلُ فِي بَقِيَّةِ يَوْمِهِمَا. Now, after mentioning the hukum, this hukum, and basing it on the fact that you cannot eat or drink during Ramadan unless you have a valid reason, he mentions an example of a valid reason. He says, if someone returns from a journey and they are not fasting, or if a woman finishes menstruating during the day, then in both these cases, it is all right for them to eat or drink during the remainder of the day. So if you were traveling, you had traveled for a week during Ramadan, and all the 6 days of your travel, except for the last day, the 6 days of your travel of that week, you were totally outside of your place of your city of residence. And so you did not have to fast. So you weren't fasting. The seventh day of your journey, you were outside. You began that day outside of your city of residence. So you didn't fast. During the middle of the day, you came home. For that person, because the beginning of Ramadan started for him and he had the permissibility of not eating, of not fasting, when he comes in now, even though he says, well, I'm not a traveler anymore, he should realize that he still has the ability to eat for the rest of the day. Also, for the woman that was menstruating, one of the conditions of the fasting is that the woman is not menstruating at the dawn time, right before Fajr, or during the day. If she went into the day not fasting because she was menstruating, and there, during the middle of the day she stopped menstruating, also she can eat and drink the rest of the day. They don't, both that traveler in that situation and that woman don't have to say, well, I no longer have my excuse to not fast, and it's daylight hours of Ramadan, so I can't eat or drink. They're saying, no, for you, you began the day with a valid reason, and even though that valid reason has been removed, you still have that hukum, because this is not a fast. You can't fast half of a day. Is that clear? وَمَنْ أَفْطَرَ فِي تَطَوِّعِهِ عَامِدًا أَوْ سَافَرَ فِيهِ فَأَفْطَرَ لِسَفَرِهِ فَعَلَيْهِ الْقَضَاءِ. If you are doing a voluntary fast and you break your fast intentionally, or if you start off on a journey and break your fast because of it, you must make up that day. So, unlike in the Shafi'i and the Hanbali Madhab, in the Maliki Madhab, if you do a voluntary fast, if like now it's Sha'ban, if say tomorrow you say, I'm going to fast. Now, even though it was not an obligation upon you to go into that fast, once you start a non-obligatory fast, it becomes an obligation for you to finish it. You can't say, well, it was an obligate. It's not an obligatory fast, so I can cut it off. According to Imam Malik, you have to complete it. It wasn't wajib for you to do it in the first place, but now that you embarked on this act of worship, you have to complete it. And the same goes for nafila prayers. If you start a nafila, a non-obligatory prayer, it wasn't an obligation for you to do it in the first place, but once you start it, you have to complete it. The Shafi'is and the Hanbalis use as a proof for the permissibility of breaking a non-obligatory fast, the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ says, the one who's fasting a non-obligatory fast is the leader of his fast. If he wants, he can break his fast, or if he wants, he can continue it. So they say that is if you go into the day, you can, on a non-obligatory fast, we're not talking about Ramadan, we're talking about other than Ramadan, if you go into that fast in the middle of the day, you say, I don't want to fast anymore, you can do that. The meaning of that hadith is that yes, you are the amir of your nafs, you're the commander of yourself, meaning you can either eat or you can fast. That's before you go into the fast. That you have that choice, you're the commander before you embark on that worship. Once you choose to fast though, then you no longer have the choice. That hadith means that you have the choice before fasting. But once you make the choice to do the non-obligatory fast, you have to complete it. So because of breaking the fast without a valid reason, you have to make that up. Here he's talking about non-obligatory fast. Obligatory fast, he's going to discuss it. You have to make up an obligatory fast whether or not you had a valid reason. So if you were traveling during Ramadan and you had the excuse, a valid excuse to not fast, it's permissible for you to eat during Ramadan, but you still have to make it up. The menstruating woman, the pregnant woman, the nursing woman, they all have to make up their fast. Every fast of Ramadan, you have to make it up. And he's going to talk about, now that there's going to be a lot of questions about the nursing pregnant, the nursing pregnant woman and their fasting and what they do and do they make it up. And he's got a section in there and we'll answer those questions at that section. Was there a question in the back? The question was if you started the travel and you're fasting, but you start with the intention. The question was, can a person say, I'm traveling, I don't have to fast, but I'm going to fast as long as it gets hard for me, and then I'll break it. That wouldn't be valid, because you either choose to fast or you choose not to fast. So in summary, to the person that's traveling, it's not an obligation to fast while you're traveling. But if you go ahead and make the choice too fast, you have to continue it. You should continue the fast. Because like we were saying, that according to Imam Malik, if you begin a non-obligatory fast, a nafila fast, whether it's the fasting Monday and Thursday, or if you're fasting, whatever it is, if you're fasting any nafila fast, even if a person invites you to food, you don't break it. You tell them. Now some people, if they don't know the Maliki hukm and they just read the hadiths about if a person invites you, you know, break your fast, they should realize that that's another madhab. If you were Shafi'i or if you were Hanbali, yeah, you could do that. But if you're Maliki, you don't do that.
What was the question?
The question was if a person is traveling and during the travel they're performing a non-obligatory fast, a nafila fast, and during the middle of the day they're visiting somebody. And then that person has made an effort to prepare a meal for them. Should that person break that fast and then make it up, or should they continue fasting? If they're Maliki, they continue fasting. If they're Shafi'i, again, they have the ability to not fast. Now, I know that's come up, and I've heard that before, because a person would be fasting, a Maliki, and then somebody says, well, you know, it's sunnah for you to break the fast if somebody, you know, well, you have to tell them that no, according to Imam Malik, the Alim of Medina, the one that Prophet ﷺ told us that would be in Medina giving fatwa, and he gave fatwa after 70 of the highest ulama in Medina gave him ijazah, that he said that if you start a non-obligatory fast, you don't break it. And then if they don't understand that, if they get mad, then alhamdulillah, you figured out they're not real good friends. a person, when we talk about the different madhab, some people when they first hear it, they think, oh, this is like khilaf. No, it's just teaching you that they can have, if you can't understand that there can be differences on this level, like we have differences based on valid reasoning, like Imam Malik, nobody can say they know, living today, there's nobody that can say they know the Arabic language better than Malik. They know the hadith better than Malik. And if he had an understanding on this hadith, with his immense wara, he never wore his sandals in the city of the Prophet ﷺ. He walked barefoot. He never rode his horse in the city of Medina. He never left the city of the Prophet ﷺ except for the Hajj. He was born in Medina and he died in Medina. If you go to Medina, you can visit his grave. He's buried right next to the mother of the believers. He taught right next to the grave of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So Malik said that if they can't respect that, then how are they going to respect like cultural differences? The Quran says, "Inna ja'alnakum shu'uban wa qabaila lita'arafu. Inna akramakum 'inda Allahi atqakum." We have made you tribes and peoples so that you can come to know each other and then realize that the most noble of you is the most God-fearing. And so in getting to see, you know, there's cultural differences, as long as we're talking about the realm of permissible, food, language, color, all these natural things are just permissible things. People have Islam is trying to teach us to get beyond those barriers. If a person can't get beyond something really clear, like what the scholars have said, this is obligation, and other scholars have said that's not an obligation, and they can't see that that's a valid difference and get along with this person, then how are they going to get over like cultural differences, racial differences, language differences? The question was, can you, after waking up after the dawn, after the fajr, can you make, and you hadn't eaten or drinking anything, can you make an intention to fast? According to Imam Shafi'i, you can. According to Imam Malik, you don't. That you have to have the intention before the fajr. For what? Except for Ramadan, in that if you had the intention at the first night, then for the remainder of those nights, you don't have to have it. And we'll just use the last, it's 6:17. I know the class was scheduled to go to 7, but this is we covered a lot. And so we'll stop right there. Let me just see this. Oh, let me just finish up this one last hukum. We'll stop on section 23.4. If in a voluntary fast you break your fast unintentionally, you do not have to make up that day. But if this happens in the obligatory fast, you have to make up. You have to make up a day. If you're fasting a nafila fast and you accidentally eat something, your fast is correct. Continue fasting. But if you're in Ramadan and you accidentally eat something, continue on not eating anything, but your fast is not correct. And again, this is also, there's a difference of opinion. According to Imam Malik, this is the hukum. That even in the obligatory fast, if you eat something unintentionally or forgetting that you're fasting, if it just is in your mouth and you spit it out, your fast is fine. But if it reaches your throat, your fast is over. But you continue on not eating or drinking in a state of imsak, that you're not eating, but you have to make up that fast. But you don't have to do a kafara. You don't have to pay the expiation. In the non-obligatory fast, If you eat something out of forgetfulness, your fast is correct. And again, there's a difference of opinion, but this is the opinion of Imam Malik. No, you can't. You can chew things that you can do. They said you can rinse out your mouth, like in wudu, you have to rinse out your mouth, but you should do it at the front of the mouth. Don't get it to the back of the mouth. If you're really thirsty, they said you can put water in your mouth and spit it out, as long as you get all the water out. Chewing gum. They said you can chew a date, like if a person wants to chew a date for, you know, sometimes when they chew up some food for their kid or just chew a date, but you have to spit everything out. It's makruh to do that, like to put ilk, and they specifically mention like ilk, to chew ilk, but you have to spit it out. So if you're chewing gum, there's flavors and residue of the gum, and usually part of it is swallowed, so you don't chew gum. And he's going to mention the hukum about siwak, but also we can just mention that real quick because a lot of people do it, toothpaste. Because toothpaste is also pretty powerful. As soon as you put it in the mouth, it'll go all over the mouth. If it's just the miswak, like if it's a wooden miswak or the regular toothbrush, you can use it as long as it's dry. If you put water on it, it becomes makruh. Like say you take your regular plastic toothbrush and you put water on it and you brush your teeth, that's makruh. If you just used it dry, that's permissible. As soon as if you put toothpaste on it, it's still makruh. It's disliked, and just be careful because as soon as it reaches your throat, it breaks your fast. And from what we asked one of the shiuch about toothpaste specifically, because they said they if you do it, if like say for example chewing gum, we said it's disliked. If you do it and an accident gets to the back of your mouth, you break your fast, but there's no kafara. But if you were to do, you don't have to pay feed 60 people or fast 60 days. But if you use, say, they give an example, a miswak, the wooden toothstick made from the coconut tree. They said if you, they gave that as an example because if you take the miswak from a coconut tree, it's very, it has a very pungent taste. And so if you use the miswak, it's real simple for that, the flavor of that wooden the toothstick to get to the throat. So Sheikh Abdullah, one of the shiukh that we studied with in Mauritania and also taught here, he said that the toothpaste would be like the toothstick from the coconut tree in that it's very powerful. So if it breaks your, if it gets to your throat, it not only breaks your fast, but you have to also feed 60 people or fast 60 days. You have to do the kafara because you did something that was careless. You put something in that could really quickly break your fast. So if you're going to use toothpaste, use it like at the time of suhoor in the morning. And then the rest of the day, just use the regular toothbrush. If it's the saliva that's produced from doing miswak, because it's saliva that was, like if you use a dry toothstick or a dry toothbrush, any moisture or saliva being produced, it was already in your mouth. So if you swallow it again, it doesn't break your fast. But it's better to spit it out. And even if there was food stuck in between your teeth from, say, before fajr or before dawn, like from the suhoor, and you brush your teeth or you accidentally swallowed that, that doesn't break your fast. What's that? Like phlegm, and I guess also would be like the saliva produced from brushing your teeth would be like that. You should spit it out. There's two opinions in the Maliki Madhab, whether swallowing phlegm or saliva that's collected in the mouth, if you swallow that, does it break your fast? Some of the scholars said it does break your fast, but the dominant opinion is that it does not break your fast, but it is disliked. So the best thing is if there is phlegm or a lot of saliva collected in the mouth, and just spit it out. Then you're fine. The question was if you started like the first day of Ramadan, you didn't realize it was Ramadan, you prayed Fajr and then you ate something. What do? You stop eating or drinking for the rest of your day, and there's no sin upon you. Because you didn't know it was Ramadan, and then you just make up that day. You have to stop eating. Yeah, once you find out it's Ramadan, you stop eating and stop drinking. Naam. And what's the second question? There was two questions. The first question was, what is the hukum using incense and or other perfumes or deodorants or so forth during the daylight hours of Ramadan? Using being around incense. It's okay, like if you want to burn incense in your house, it's fine. But watch out for the smoke. Don't breathe in the smoke. Because if you have really powerful incense, you can go ahead and try this just so you can like see. If you get really close to it and you take a whiff of it, you'll feel it in the back of your throat. Because there is actual physical substance in the incense and it gets in and your nose leads right to your throat. You'll feel it. If it's strong, you can actually kind of taste it in the back of your throat. If it's like that and you take a whiff of that and it gets to your throat and you feel it, it broke your fast. For incense, and that actually goes for any type of smoke or even the vapors produced by cooking. And alhamdulillah, thank you for mentioning, because since running water is a blessing that almost every American enjoys, and that's not the case for the rest of the world, since that is the case and people take hot showers, that steam produced in the hot shower can break your fast, so watch out. So if you're going to take a hot shower and there's that vapor is being produced, if you do sniff it in and it gets to your throat, it broke your fast. So take that before Fajr or after Maghrib or do something, take a cold, like turn the colder water on so that you do that. But that would break your fast. So if you're cooking and you're over the pot and there's like a lot of steam being produced from the pot and that gets into your nose and you feel it in your throat, it broke your fast. Or incense or smoke if you're around a campfire, for example, and you inhale that and you feel it in the top of your throat, that breaks your fast. As far as actually wearing scents, like deodorants that have a smell or oils, during the daylight hours of Ramadan, it's makruh. And the reason for that is because that one of the things that you're supposed to abstain from during Ramadan is the pleasure of the genitals. Perfume is something that kind of awakens that sense. Even if a person is not married, because that sensation would be kind of awakened, he should stay away from that, he or she. So you wearing perfumes or wearing any type of scents is makruh, is disliked. Smelling scents, like if you have a bottle of perfume and you just want to smell it, that's fine. But if there's incense and burning incense is fine. But if you get it to where you actually can sniff it in, it would break your fast. Yeah, the same thing. Anything with scent in it, if it's at least according to the Maliki Madhab, using scents, putting scents on the body is considered makruh. Yeah, the question about diabetics is a very good question because it happens a lot. And and right before I answer this question, or right after, I'll mention that. But diabetes, because you know, once you don't have food intake, your blood sugar goes down really, really low. And for diabetics, it's really dangerous, especially if they're driving a car. You know, they could faint, or even if they're not driving a car, if they're in a house, faint, hit their head on something is real dangerous for them. Depending on their level of you know, how much the harm, if you have an injection, injections don't break the fast. Something like a IV might break the fast, depending. But a mere injection wouldn't break the fast. If that person is diabetic and he knows from prior experience that fasting could harm him, he could faint, it could harm him in any way, or the doctor has told him not to do it, he shouldn't do it. And he shouldn't think that it's the ibadah. He might actually be disobeying Allah by fasting if it's going to cause him considerable harm. Then as far as using inhalers break the fast. So if a person has asthma and he can go throughout the day without using the inhaler, but in a certain point of the day he has to use the inhaler because it's going to harm him, go ahead and use the inhaler, but just make up that fast. Yeah, the point is just, if your question was if your diabetes is under control. Yeah, so if your diabetes is under control and you know that fasting is not going to harm you, you know from your own experience, you can base it on your own experience or the advice of a well-informed doctor. Well-informed meaning that he knows everything, the medical aspect of it, and also he knows the importance of the fasting to the Muslim. So if he's a well-informed doctor, he can and he tells you don't fast because it could cause you considerable harm, then it would be haram for that person to fast. If he says it's going to get you a little sick, it's going to give you a fever, it's going to give you a cold, then it would be permissible for him to fast, but it's better for him not to fast. Right. If it's non-scented lotion or non-scented deodorant, it's fine. The important thing is just the scent is makruh. He's going to mention that. Tasting the food for the woman that's cooking, if a woman is cooking or if a man's cooking, if he wants to taste the food to see if it's too salty or whatever, it's makruh, it's disliked to taste the food, but once they do so, they spit it out. Yeah, as long as they don't swallow. Not only don't swallow, it doesn't get to the throat. Like when we talk about these things, it's not that it only doesn't get to the stomach, doesn't get to the throat. So, you know, you might get some toothpaste to your throat and then spit it all up, and it doesn't get to your stomach. But as soon as it gets to your throat, then it broke your fast. Tasting the food is makruh. Brother?
Could you just clarify again the difference between using a dry toothbrush
right
versus a wet, and
right
how that contrasts with putting each water in the front of your mouth?
Right. So if you, if it's a dry toothstick, like if it's a miswak, the wooden toothstick, or if it's a plastic toothbrush, and you don't put any water on it, it's permissible. If you put water on it to moisten it, or if you put toothpaste, it becomes disliked, makruh, and toothpaste is very disliked. If you just merely want to rinse out your mouth because you're really thirsty and you spit it all out, that's also disliked. The only rinsing of the mouth that's allowed during Ramadan without being offensive, without being disliked, is the rinsing of the mouth during wudu. And even at that, he should just, like, you know, you don't rinse out the whole mouth, you just rinse out the front of the mouth. Actually, I have to go. So any more questions, we'll, inshallah, answer them next week. He's going to talk about the rules of fasting while on traveling, but just really quick, as long as you have the hukum of shortening your prayers, it's not wajib to fast. If you're in a town more than 4 days, you no longer shorten your prayers and you have to fast. So between your city of residence and your destination, you don't have to fast. Once you're in your place of destination, As long as you're there for less than 4 days, you also don't have to fast. As soon as you make the intention of staying there for 4 days, you have to fast during your stay there. Also, during your first day of travel, if your first day of travel begins after Fajr, you have to fast that day. Because to have the dispensation of not fasting while traveling, you have to have left your place of residence and been out of the city limits before the dawn is in.
For more information on traditional Islam in America, please contact Zaytuna Institute at 510-582-1979 and on the internet at www.zaytuna.org.